Why don't you be part of the solution too? And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Chew on that one for a little bit. Thanks, everybody. Felt like a great show. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 113 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. We are also brought to you by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's CRMW.net, and we appreciate their support very much. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Tuesday, February the 5th, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Tuesday night, which is February the 5th, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you are welcome to call and participate and talk to myself and to the guest whom I'll be introducing shortly. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that, and you'll save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333, and it rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. I do try to check the email during the breaks when we get to them. We occasionally do get to breaks on the show, much to the producer's horror, but we sometimes get to them. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. There you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links there also to the guests' websites, and you'll find links there to the chat room, which is active as we speak, and you'll find links there to the Head On Radio Network main site, where you can help support the network by clicking on a PayPal button, and so much more at headonradionetwork.com. You can find out about all of the other progressive programming on this network, of which I'm only a very small part, but proud to be so. You'll find links there also for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. You know, it's so strange with Bob gone. I do miss him terribly. Bob will be back Thursday evening, by the way. But it's just so strange for me. I know you guys are listening to the replay stream, but as I said last night, in my headphones on this end, it's absolute silence. And then all of a sudden, the theme music starts. It's like, instead of the curtain slowly opening and you sort of transition from Bob, you suddenly realize it's showtime. So, oh, Lord, I'll be glad when that man gets back. By the way, we heard from John today, John Fox down in Australia. He's our host who handles environmental issues and so many other things. We heard he's our network engineer also. From the audio perspective, we depend on him greatly for that. We heard from John, and John's high-speed broadband problems are fairly much resolved at this point, and John intends to also join us Thursday evening. So with Bob being back, and I'll be with you Thursday evening, and with John being with us Thursday evening, we're going to have a regular, standard, head-on radio network evening Thursday evening. Now, I'll tell you now that tomorrow evening, Bob will still be out of pocket. In fact, he's not going to arrive at the airport till probably 6:30 or 7. I have a fairly complicated day tomorrow and probably won't be home till late, and there's a very good chance that Bob will, in other words, we're going to be running reruns tomorrow night. Please forgive us, but that's the situation when Bob's traveling and John's getting his system set back up with the broadband, and As it turns out, I double booked myself for appointments tomorrow, so things are a little bit out of control for me. So tomorrow evening we'll be running reruns, or at least recently run shows. We will be back Thursday, though, with a vengeance. I assure you we will be back loud and strong. We're going to introduce our guest in just a moment. Our guest is Donna Marie. Donna Marie is in Arkansas. Donna Marie is in the very upper left-hand corner of Arkansas, in the extreme northwestern part of Arkansas, and we'll find out more about that part of the state. Donna Marie is also with the Northwest Arkansas GLBT Community Center, among other things, and we will be talking with her about what's going on in Alabama regarding adoption. It seems that there's a little fundamentalist group there that's been there since 1989, called the Family Council. And the Family Council's been at the forefront of promoting and protecting what they at least refer to as that, the traditional family, which we all know what that means, everybody but us. And they support those values, of course, in Arkansas. He proudly proclaims, their leader, that they are part of a nationwide network that is affiliated with, I think you already know, Focus on the Family, Dr. James Dobson, the head bigot. And he says that our mission involves shaping public opinion through media interviews and producing voters' guides and shaping public policy. They're also dedicated to, get this, promoting homeschooling, which means basically teaching children that God invented the rifle so that man could kill the dinosaurs and homosexuals. I think they succeeded with the dinosaurs. It's just that God keeps making more homosexuals. They are in the business of bringing out the Republican vote is what they're really in the business of. And there's so many backhanded things that they're trying to do. But the current uproar is they're attempting to change adoption fairly radically in Arkansas. And I'd like to run a short audio clip. Runs about, a minute, 20 seconds. It's not very long, but I'd like to give you an example of what the Family Council in Arkansas is actually doing. Agnes, please run the clip.
Devin is my granddaughter, and she's lived with me most of her life. Devin has also been more like my child than a grandchild.
I've always known that my nana was a lesbian. Always. Both of them? So as a kid, it wasn't really a big thing, because it was just, she's my nana, that's the way it is. It's always been that way.
I just know that, you know, for me, it's a sense of obligation and, you know, the things that you do to make sure a child's okay. And she's made the decision that she feels like this is where she wants to be too, you know, for her welfare and her benefit. SB 959 was a bill designed to ban gays and lesbians and heterosexual cohabitating couples in a sexual relationship from being foster or adoptive parents. I would not be able to adopt her if the bill passed the way it stands.
Which would take precedence? You know, her being lesbian or her being my biological grandmother?
If we were separated, we would be devastated.
So she's my nana. She's taken care of me like my whole life. How dare you tell me she can't take care of me now?
I just didn't know how I could take one more slap at my humanity. 50 years on this earth, and I still have to prove to people that I deserve the same rights that they have.
Donna Marie, welcome to Strictly Confidential. I'm so pleased to have you aboard.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here. It was surprising to hear Randy Romo. That was a good friend of mine on that clip.
I'll be darned. I had no idea, obviously. I gleaned that clip late this afternoon, and I'm so pleased that you know her. That's an interesting insight. I take it that you guys, by looking in the general area, this is a fairly rural part of Arkansas. Is that, would I be correct in saying that?
Well, the area that we live in is quite metropolitan because this is Walmart Central. 30 years of Walmart influence means that We've got people here from all over the world because of Walmart's buying practices and the vendors that they have. So in our community center's focus area, which covers four counties up here, Benton County, Washington County, Carroll County, and Madison County, we have some small cities or overgrown small towns. And then we have Eureka Springs, the gay Mecca, and then we have Madison County, which I refer to as our bastion of country queers. We've got quite a few of us out there.
That's amazing. So, you mentioned so many things. The bit about Eureka, there was a news article that you're reminding me now that we did a while back about the outrage of it becoming an LGBT destination. I had completely forgotten about that.
Yeah, the AFA has branded it Gay Mecca, so we all have to make our pilgrimage. When are you coming?
And I see now, I realize that the community center is, even though it looks on the map to be fairly rural up there, that's Bentonville, and I thought that sounded familiar. That is Walmart capital of the world.
Yes, it is. It is the Walmart capital of the world. But yes, we are rural compared to the metropolitan areas on the coasts, and we have a rural attitude here. It's a small town attitude in Arkansas across the Ozarks. It varies from city to city.
I have to tell you that I live in a very rural area of North Florida. In fact, I lived on a dirt road in the middle of nowhere. There are days that I don't see anyone. It's funny when you get a little bit isolated like that. It's so nice to talk to someone who's not in like New York or Denver. You know what I'm saying? That's always a nice perspective. The Family Council. They recently claimed, and this just surprised me very much, they're saying that as we looked into the issue, we discovered that cohabitating heterosexual homes were not good for children either. But then when you actually find out what they're saying behind the scenes, they're saying that they felt that they could accomplish this, which is really anti-LGBT adoption, they could accomplish it by simply not bringing up the word homosexual. They felt that if they just banned it for any cohabitating couple. What do you think about this? What's going on up there? This is, in fact, we talked about it a bit the other evening, and we had several people in chat wondering about how it affected children. Is one of the reasons that we contacted you.
Well, I can talk a little bit about what's been going on up here in the last couple of years with that. I would like to make a point, although I am with the Northwest Arkansas GLBT Community Center and I am the president of that organization, the comments I make tonight are mine, they're my opinions, and please don't let anyone misconstrue that they reflect the opinion of the community center. This is Donna Marie's view on the world. Now, we use that against the Family Council last year in that we made a lot of phone calls to mom and pop and grandma and grandpa and asked them, did they know any people who were living in a common law marriage with kids? And they, of course, said, oh, yes. And then we explained how this bill that was in the Senate last year would affect those people. And we actually got a couple of rural representatives that changed their vote in the Judiciary Committee, and that's how we got this bill killed last year. Once the Family Council figured out they could not get it through the legislature, they decided to come up with this petition drive, and then they reworded it to make it say that it's not good for any cohabitating couple to foster or to adopt a child, although it's okay for a single person as long as they're not cohabitating. It's really funny. I was reading their website today in preparation for this, and I saw some things that I found to be quite humorous, and one of them was the list of organizations that they thought were wrong when they said that it didn't matter if a child was in a cohabitating home.
this ought to be interesting.
The list of organizations that they think are wrong are the American Psychiatric Association, the Child Welfare League of America, the American Psychological Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the list goes on. And they list all the reasons why these groups are part of the homosexual agenda. I found that quite funny.
I completely understand you. They think I'm the devil himself. You know, they apparently think I actually wrote the homosexual agenda, although I've actually never seen a copy of it. So what they're saying then is everybody in the world is wrong, but Dobson. Is that a good way to put it?
Well, yes. It doesn't matter. No opinion matters except theirs, and. Let's face it, they just want things to be the way they always were back in the days when we had spinster aunts and confirmed bachelors that lived together to help each other out. We had older ladies who moved in together so they could take care of each other, but we didn't have okay?
This is wonderful. I'm sorry, I was having a little audio difficulty. Yes, that is it's so true of the South. Those are the exact phrases we use, confirmed bachelors and what have you. And there was any excuse in the world not to say anyone was. In fact, you could grow up in a family and not even know your uncles or your cousins were LGBT.
Yeah, and. You know, I grew up in very part of rural Mississippi, and of course, it wasn't easy. I learned really quickly that I had to hide the fact that I was a transsexual. I would never live to be grown. But my best friend down the road, God bless his soul, may he rest in peace, Richie Miller. Richie was born gay, and he couldn't help it. I used to have to protect him on the playground, you know. We are who we are, and we have to live the life that we are dealt. And I can't figure out why the heterosexual religious so-called Christians can't live by what Christ taught, and that was love and acceptance. So I don't know where bigotry came into it.
Well, you're absolutely correct about that. It's something we talk about here evening after evening. You know, they really are the Pharisees of the modern world. In fact, we have settled this program more than once. God save us from the Christians. It is always amazing to us the lengths that they will go to put themselves in a position that they feel that they are right. They feel so threatened by being shown to be incorrect on any issue. And do you know, Donna, that we've had some psychologists talking on the show who actually said and confirmed this for me, there is an absolutely direct correlation between how homophobic you are and how secure you are about your own sexuality. I see all these people as walking closet cases, which has proved time and again. What do you got, your Larry Craigs and your Foleys and the whole bit? Every time you turn around, another one falls out of the nest.
Yeah, that's correct. It does seem to me to be true that the more homophobic you are, it's a direct correlation with how insecure you are about your own sexuality. And a lot of these, I don't know where sexuality got to be demonized other than, you know, what the Catholic Church decided to do to it back in the Middle Ages. And anyway, what does my sexuality have to do with my ability to love and care for a child?
Well, you're
I don't understand
correct,
that. And this is what this is about. It's about children. Children in homosexual homes who are more well-adjusted than I do children in heterosexual homes that are well-adjusted.
Well, I have to hand it to you. There's a very distinct possibility. In fact, I could see how that could be completely true. To have LGBT parents, those parents would have to indeed given a lot of thought about about the world and relationships as a whole, you have to sort of do a lot of self-examination to just make it through. So certainly those kids are going to be better balanced. This is interesting to me. Do you have kids? When I was speaking to your partner the other day, and she was saying that they had moved away. They're grown. What was it like?
Both of my children are grown, and they come from the time that I was masquerading as a male. I have a daughter that's 35 and a son that's 25. And my daughter is devoutly Pentecostal. She hasn't worn pants, makeup, or cut her hair in 15 years.
I understand.
So she and I have a very tenuous relationship. We love each other, and we still talk on the phone and visit from time to time. But, you know, she actually, when she found out I was transsexual, I got outed by one of my sisters. She was so relieved I wasn't gay. And then I had to ask the question, Jennifer, I was born with male plumbing, but I've always known in my mind I was a woman. So if I'm a woman and I like women, am I gay?
Her response had to cause her to scratch her head for a moment.
It did cause her to scratch her head for a moment. And, you know, we were talking about a well-adjusted children. And Devin, Randy Romo's granddaughter that you had in that audio clip,
yes,
that is one of the most well-adjusted young ladies I've ever met in my life. She does well in school. She's well-behaved. She volunteers her time to work for social causes. You know, she's a shining example of a well-adjusted teenager. And, you know, she's basically been raised by her grandmother, who is one of the most out lesbian activists in the state of Arkansas.
I didn't realize that she was active. I just didn't know that. What an amazingly small world it is to have to have pulled that audio clip. You were talking earlier about this constant reference to sexuality from the organizations. I hesitate to even call them the church because they're so far off from what the teachings of Christ were that it's actually an insult to Christianity to call them the church or Christians. But one of the methods that they use that we were actually discussing last evening was to take away people's dignity. We said that God gives us all dignity at least that, and they spend quite a lot of energy taking it away by constantly saying that it's sexual. There's no talk about the flowers in the front yard. Are holding your hands, holding each other's hands, or kids, or love, or psychological support, or being there when times are rough, and donating a kidney when you're in the hospital. It's always sex, sex, sex. Don't you get sick of it? If we had as much sex as these people accuse us of, we wouldn't have time for anything else. It's just appalling.
I definitely agree with you, Peter, but it's... they have to find something that they can use as a crowbar for leverage. And when you talk about sex, that's still a taboo subject down here in the South among polite company. So every time they get to throw that word sex in, it's a shock effect to some of the people. And it allows them to focus... to focus on the sex and not focus on the issues. And sexuality has nothing to do with judgment. Sexuality has nothing to do with love. And it certainly has nothing to do with parenting skills.
Well, I completely agree with you in everything you've said. Sexuality is, when you look at it as a sex act, is actually such a small part of our existence. It does definitely change, though, how we perceive the world. In order to grow up as an LGBT person, you have to really do some self-examination. It's a shame that is being used as a crowbar issue, and especially now that children are involved. You know, the organization, the family folks were talking about earlier, the Family Council. They're saying they're going to use the same methods to gather these signatures that they used to get the marriage amendment, or what is always referred to as a protection of marriage amendment. Now, is it my understanding that Arkansas does have both a law against LGBT marriage and a constitutional amendment, both?
You know, we have a law. I do not know that we have a constitutional amendment, but we do have a law. I'm sorry, I'm unprepared to answer that question.
Not a problem. And the only reason I'm asking it is, in Florida, we have a law, too, that says no two people of the same gender can marry. Nonetheless, in Florida, they've just gotten enough signatures to put on the ballot for November a constitutional amendment to the Constitution of the state of Florida to make it, and they say that this is to prevent activist judges, which means anyone they don't agree with, of course, from changing the law. Personally, I see it as simply an attempt to bring out the conservative vote. What do you think about that?
Of course, yes. Anything that they can do to manipulate the electorate to take this country from a democracy to a theocracy, that's what they want to do. And what the conservatives, the social conservatives, don't realize is as soon as these people garner power, then it won't just be any Christian. It'll only be the right kind of Christian. It'll only be their way. Anything that restricts anyone in America hurts all of us.
Well, you're absolutely right there. I completely agree with you. What was the old saying about first they came for the was it the Jews, and then they came for, there's a whole list of people, and then they came for me. You know, these signatures, one appalling thing we've noticed in Florida is that they're getting these signatures without paying the first person to gather signatures. They're doing it all within the church. Are you seeing this also in Arkansas?
Well, yes, of course. And actually, I have the instructions printed out here somewhere, and it says, now, you can't just lay this on the table at the church. You have to watch it, because the law says you have to see the petition signed. They went to that, you know, into such detail as saying, no, you can't lay it on the table at the church. You have to hold it and hand it to someone so that you see the signature go on the paper.
I see.
So that tells me they expect to get this done at the churches. And frankly, you know, they only need 62,000 people. And, you know, in a state the size of Arkansas, it's not that hard to find 62,000 bigots. It's really not.
It's not hard in Florida either, Don. And I have to tell you, they allowed regarding the marriage amendment in Florida, they have allowed them 4 years, which is an extraordinarily long time, to gather signatures. In Florida, they raised the bar to 60% of it. So they had to gather 611,000 signatures to get this done. Turned out, about a month or so, they discovered they were 20,000 short. And within a period of 1 month, without paying one person as a professional, you go out and stand in front of the public library where you get paid before the signatures. And within 1 month, they not only got those 20,000, they actually got 90,000 signatures, every single one of them within the church. One of the things we've seen here is peer pressure, because what they're doing is in the churches, they're not just, as you say, you're right, they're not just handing it to them. What they're doing is at this last 90,000 they got by actually, you know, putting these petitions in people's hands in the pews, and they're expected to sign these things and put them in the collection. So you can't sit there and think to yourself, well, I really don't want to sign this, but if I don't sign it, there's my neighbor Joe and my neighbor Fred. They're going to think I'm queer. It's astounding the tactics they will go to.
Well, that is one of the tactics that they actually, they don't talk about it on their website, but I have read some other documentation where they talk about that it's much easier to garner valid signatures in a group of Christians or a group of conservative people, and that's what they hint at. They hint at the peer pressure without actually saying it. You know, they wouldn't want to encourage publicly the use of peer pressure, but they want to do everything they can to infer it.
Yeah, they're very good at that, aren't they, Donna?
Yes, they are. They are very good at that. And another thing is that, you know, in reading this bill, it says, well, we don't ask the sexuality of single people to be foster parents. So, therefore, a single homosexual could still be a foster parent under this bill. They just can't cohabitate. And the thing that I found to be most appalling to me was that would it prevent a blood relative who was a homosexual from fostering a child? And it said that person would have the choice of fostering the child or having a cohabitating relationship, but they couldn't do both. So here you have the gay grandmother, and this hits home in Randy's case. You have the lesbian grandmother who, in order to be the foster parent for her child under this law, would have to give up her right to ever have a live-in lover should she find someone who was her soulmate. A helpmate, someone to help wash the dishes and the clothes and take care of the child. You can't have that unless you have the benefit of marriage, which has been made illegal to anyone other than heterosexuals.
Don, I have to agree with you. This is one of the things that disturbed me so much in reading about what's going on in Arkansas. It's simply so transparent. There's obviously, if they're trying to protect children, there's the potential of a child being in a bad situation with either a heterosexual single person or a homosexual single person. So they're not trying to protect the child all there. What they want to do is get the voters out.
Absolutely. I personally would trust a cohabitating couple to be a good foster parent before I would trust a single person to be a good foster parent, because you have balance when you have a partner. You have someone to say, wait a minute, you're angry, don't talk right now, we need to sit down. Wait a minute, well, is that the decision you really want to make? You're allowing someone to go it alone and sail a ship and captain a ship alone of raising a child, but you're not allowing them to have help.
Well, Donna, that has a lot of insight, and it makes me think. I don't have children, and but in talking to people and looking at my sisters who do have children, children can be the most exasperating. The most exasperating experience you could ever have, in addition to a loving relationship. So yes, the balance is very important. When a kid has driven you completely out of your gourd, maybe you need someone to say, calm down.
Right. Yeah, maybe you do. Or maybe you need someone to sit and talk with you about finding out what's best for the child in schoolwork, or what's best for the child in social activities. You know, I someone wrote a book one time, and I know who it is, but I won't mention her name on this program today because it's election day. It Takes a Village. And, you know, I kind of agree with that to raise a child, it does take the cooperation of a community to raise a balanced child. Because
amen,
I know,
Donna.
I couldn't get away with anything in the community I grew up with. Someone would tell my parents.
Well said, and it's a lot of it has to do with communities creating, giving a child an impression of what the world is like. In other words, fostering certain attitudes. It takes a village to make a bigot, too, is what I'm getting at, Donna.
But it does because I was raised in the South in the '60s. Before I knew better, I stood on the steps of the local Ku Klux Klan clavern when I was 7 years old, wearing my little white sheet. handing out bigotry material. I know. I came for that.
You had to go through that, and all the while knowing that they would chew you up and spit you out if they knew.
Oh, yeah, if they knew. Yes, I know all about that. I lived through it.
Bless your heart. What a terrible experience. We talked the other evening about a church pastor. It happened to be a church in New York City, and he did this fiery sermon about, no queers, no faggots are going to, are not men. We want all the real men to come up front, not you faggots. And so obviously there was a lot of, the men went up front. In other words, afterwards we found out that probably 20 or 30, some of the LGBT people were saying it, that they went up too because, it's the same situation you were in as a child with the pamphlets, they had to go up too or be scorned or kicked out. I mean, obviously if you didn't go up there, you were a queer or faggot is what he was putting it. Is that the
right
way it felt to you?
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons that our community today, the generation, my generation and Mandy's generation, we're in our 50s. We have a lot of dysfunction in our GLBT family as a whole, because just look at the abuse that all the people in our GLBT family have survived just in order to reach adulthood.
Amen.
Think about what this type of bigotry has done and is doing to good, solid Americans, to humans. Every time I get the chance, I remind one of these people as I'm talking to them face on face that I spent 20 years in the United States Navy, and when I said the Pledge of Allegiance, it said liberty and justice for all, and I can't figure out what part of all you don't understand.
That's priceless. Oh, there you go. I thought it was particularly funny. What part of all of us do you not understand? Well said.
I mean,
what background?
It's just an is. The founding fathers said all. We all men created equal. And I think that they meant all humans when they said that. So, I keep hearing that this is a Christian country. No, it's not. The founding fathers, most of them were deists. The vast majority
Absolutely.
Of them were Freemasons.
This is and true.
It's
You're
not
speaking
that you
the truth.
A Christian and a Freemason, but the vast majority of our founding fathers were not devout Christians. They were spiritual men. They understood that each man could have his own understanding of God.
Absolutely. We have that topic gets discussed in the various shows here. This one nation under God. When did that start on the currency? Back in the 50s, wasn't that when we first added it?
In God We Trust.
We're talking about
the Pledge of Allegiance, one nation under God. I think that was in the McCarthyism era was when that goes. And actually, the one nation under God, other than the fact it's an insult to atheists, I don't have a problem with, because it doesn't say who's God. And,
I happen to agree with you.
But I do understand why it would offend our atheist brothers and sisters. They have the right to not believe in God, should they so choose.
I agree with you there, too. There should be room for everybody. It's a big country, and the principles that it was founded on, clearly, it was for all of us. So we had a guest a while back. His name was Isaiah Brokenleg. He's a Lakota Indian, and he talked about the experience in the Lakota community, and apparently, traditionally, in the Lakota community, LGBT folks were called two-spirited, and they were highly regarded.
Right.
In the community, yes, and it was a fascinating conversation with that man to hear those things. Many of us in the South have some Indian ancestry. I know I do, and it was very fascinating to hear what he had to say. Don, I need to tell you that we have a caller that would like to join in the conversation. He's on the line. This is caller Gene. Gene, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Donna.
Well, hello.
Nice to
greetings
meet you.
To you.
Donna, when I first heard about this, the thing that ran across my mind regarding the cohabitating straight couples is, or, you know, the unmarried couples and so on, is suppose you get a divorce and you move in with your wife-to-be, and then you've had a marriage by, or children by this other person, the previous marriage. Is there any chance that this could be used to screw that that child's living situation out of the home? Because it sounds to me, the way the law is written, it's so vague that any spouse that was angry with a former spouse could probably really, you know, do some damage. So I was wondering if you had heard, if that was a possibility, or if you'd if you'd mentioned that to the non-gay folk in the area, saying that this was a potential problem.
Well, actually, I believe that the right kind of lawyer could possibly try to use it against you. Although, in reading the law, I don't see anything valid in it about that. However, all it takes and I've been divorced. I speak from experience. I've only been divorced four times in my life, so all it takes is just another question, just another reason to get another lawyer to wear down a spouse.
Yeah.
And when it comes to custody battles, I have never seen humans treat each other any worse.
Yeah, that's what
I'm
when
trying to find the answer to it now. I'm rereading the law as we speak, trying to find if I can give you my opinion, which matters about as much as nothing, but I'm reading it now.
One of the things that that occurs to me listening to you guys talk about this issue, you were bringing up custody, Donna, which is fascinating to me. Last evening we did a show about what's going on in the Anglican Church. As you know, the Anglican Church has appointed a gay bishop, a Gene Robinson. It's been in the news. We've probably all heard about it. The Anglican Church in South Africa is very upset about that, and they're breaking away from the main, in other words, the Anglican Church is in a lot of trouble. It's pretty much tearing itself apart. But what is interesting regarding custody of children, this is also getting down to custody of churches, because there's the whole issue of, if you're an Anglican communion and you break away from the Anglican Church, who does the building belong to? And these are normally huge structures to house, you know, many, many, many people. Some of them are historic, et cetera, et cetera. So there's all these emotional attachments to these buildings. And at this point in South Africa, people are rioting and being beaten and attacked when they go into church if they think it's someone who's there. There's actually, the church is actually fighting about who owns the church. It's this whole thing about, and it's all over LGBT people, they say. It's really, it's amazing to me to all the levels that it affects people. And they're actually fighting over the custody of the church building, much like it was their children. That just blew me away.
In response to your question,
okay.
In reading this law, it is vague enough that, yes, it could be used, possibly used against a cohabitating heterosexual couple who had custody of children from a previous marriage.
Oh my.
But it definitely could be used against a cohabitating homosexual or lesbian couple, one of whom had custody of children from a previous marriage. That's a definite. I believe it could be. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I am a trans hillbilly queer, so you just have to
probably see.
Well, I appreciate that because that was the first thing that came to my mind because it sounded awfully vaguely worded, and I did want to say thank you. Also wanted to let you know that Donna Marie happens to be my sister's name, so it's a good name that you've got, and best of luck to you, and I'll talk to you later.
Well, thank you very much. That's a wonderful thing. Thank you.
Donna Marie, thank you, Gene. Thank you for phoning in. We always appreciate Gene. Gene, by the way, Donna is in Washington State. He lives outside, I'm sorry, Oregon State. He lives outside of Oregon's kind of, you know, Portland area. But he lives outside of the Portland area and in the northern part of Oregon. One of the things that puzzles me, the whole issue of children to begin with is completely absurd. I can speak for myself. I don't want your children. The last thing I want is your children. And as if sexual predators for children are pedophiles are really that much involved in the gay community. Now, I've lived in some larger cities. I lived in Portland, Oregon. I've lived in Atlanta for a little while. And I've been in the big gay clubs, and I DJed, and I hung out, and I knew everybody. I've yet to meet a pedophile in there. You know what I'm saying? It's people meeting people, enjoying each other's company, all the things that happen in social settings. But you wouldn't find it just doesn't make sense. Why would I? You know, they're really not part of the community at all that I know of. Do you know of?
I don't. But if we look at the fact that, you know, pedophiles statistically are a certain percentage, whatever that may be, of the human population, and then we take the fact that, let's say, I don't care, pick a number. Kinsley's number says 10%. If we follow the number from the Williams Institute here in Arkansas, we have 3.6% LGB people living in this congressional district. So that drops it down from, say, 189,000 people in our district to 13,000 GLBT people. So if that was, a 1% of the persons throughout the whole population, let's say, are pedophiles, and then we would have 1% of 13,000 versus 1% of 186,000. So it seems to me that statistically there would be a lot less homosexual pedophiles than there are heterosexual pedophiles. So I don't think it matters a bit. If there's a pedophile out there, they have ways of screening that out, you would think, although we had an incident here in Arkansas that was played heavily against us where we had a single heterosexual male foster parent who abused a lot of kids.
And he male and female them. Children? Both genders children?
Yes. Yes, yeah,
actually,
right here in Bella Vista, Arkansas, just north of Bentonville. It was a tragic event.
It's very sad. Go ahead, please.
Against us, but the guy was a confirmed heterosexual.
Well, doing this show, I've had to look at a lot of different issues, and one of the interesting things I came across is that one flavor or one variety, there's several varieties of pedophiles, is attracted to children, period. Does not care whether they're male and does not care whether it's a little boy or a little girl. It's just the whole idea of children. And there's another whole set of pedophiles who are indeed heterosexual in their adult relationships, but in their pedophile, they will have also relationships with children when they can. And some of those prefer male children, some prefer female children. But it's interesting all the different divisions and colors of this. I don't want to say anything. I mean, these people are disturbed, obviously, and I wouldn't give them the...
Anyone who wants to have sex with a child is disturbed.
Absolutely, absolutely. But Donna Marie, they're all gay. That's just it. They're just all gay. There's no possibility that a heterosexual it just blows me away. The world is so freaking ignorant, and you just amazing me. You're quoting the Williams Institute. We had a a guest from the Williams Institute a while back talking about these huge population surges in the red states. And but yet we are able to find these things out, in our areas, whether they be isolated or not isolated. We find these things out, but these people, there's a whole set of people who simply have no intellectual curiosity whatsoever. Whatever they are told, they believe, and they will fight you to the death to protect it, and it's ignorance.
Yes, and these are people who I call, they eat their truth from a spoon. They don't search it out themselves. They eat the truth. They are fed from the pulpit. And that, to me, they're doing themselves a terrible disservice by refusing to exercise their own brain and research things and have an opinion instead of letting the quote-unquote pastor of the flock, which, as we've seen in so many mega churches around here recently in the South, tend to have they either like male prostitutes or female prostitutes, you know. it's been around a while down here. They let these people tell them what the truth is, and that is the truth. If you don't believe the pastor, you're not living in the truth. What happened to using your brain? God gave you a brain. I do not have a college education. I have a GED from the state of Mississippi and a PhD from the College of Hard Knocks. And if I can figure this stuff out, I'll guarantee you they can, if they only would.
This is so, so beautiful, the way you're expressing these things. I truly appreciate it. You bring to mind so many things. And in their minds, the preacher is the church. Or in other words, the preacher is God. And to disrespect the preacher or to doubt or question the preacher, and it's so much like their relationship with, say, George W. Bush. If you disagree with him or argue with anything that he has to say, you are disrespecting the office of the presidency, which you are not. You are arguing against the president. In fact, he is, the office of the presidency is, as far as I'm concerned, is tarnished with feces all over the place because of this man. But you can't argue. What is it about these people accepting these demagogues, these people who claim to represent? And I don't understand. These people just, how can you do that? I could never, ever do that.
Well, it sounds like that you have some self-respect and you have a brain and you choose to use it. And as far as I'm concerned, the office of the presidency is a wonderful institution. However, Amen. It has been desecrated by the men who have had it from time to time. It was desecrated by Bill Clinton, as far as I'm concerned, when he turned it into his private playroom.
That I have to agree with.
That was desecration. However, what George W. Bush has done to the office of the presidency is absolutely, it's appalling. Look at the blood. Let's look at the blood. Look at all the lives that, all the people who have died. How many times this man has lied and people have gotten killed. It incenses me. I'm just enraged by it.
And doubted that the conversation goes along the lines, if you argue about anything that George Bush has said, then you don't support the troops or you're not patriotic. And they drive around the SUVs with these little support the troops stickers. By the way, did you know those stickers all come from China? It's not
well,
like
some of
you
them
know,
do. I have one on my vehicle that come from Texas. And it says support all of our troops, and it's a yellow ribbon, and it's got a rainbow flag strapped across it.
Amen. That is
beautiful. Servicemen's Legal Defense Network.
Yes, we've had them on the show a couple of times. It's a wonderful organization. I didn't know they, and I didn't realize there was a support all the troops. That puts a different color on it, doesn't it?
That's right. But I as a 20-year Navy veteran, I believe that I have a right to speak about supporting troops, and in the 20 years I was in the military, some of the best people that I had worked for me were gay or lesbian, and I protected them and their identity. and I did the best that I could for them, like I did every sailor that was ever under my care, because they were honorable, hardworking people. And I met more honorable, hardworking gay people than I did honorable, hardworking heterosexual people. It's amazing what the population of the military really is. If you get in and look, there are way more gay people in the military than people realize.
This is something that I hear from guests that we've had on the show, and now you're echoing it too, that who are LGBT, who have been in the military for periods of time. All of you say that. All of you seem to echo that. It's just there has to be a huge undercurrent of, and you wonder why. Maybe it's to get out of the small town, to get away from to get the hell away from all the attitudes. Do you think that might be part of it?
Well, part of it may be that, and I know for me, because, okay, I believe I was born bisexual because I never remember a day I wasn't attracted to both genders. I knew from the age I was 5 that I this boy thing wasn't for me. I really was a woman on the inside. And I joined the military to prove I was a man. That's why I did it. If I did it, maybe this desire to be a woman will go away. I can go prove I'm a man. And I think that a lot of the male homosexuals that join the military, that's one of the undercurrents of it. And I think a lot of the females, it's because they'll get an opportunity to live and be who they want to be in a more masculine environment, and it will be seen as something good instead of something bad if they're in a masculine job on the outside.
Well said. I've not heard these perspectives before. This is a new perspective. I've just not heard
it. Think about it. A lesbian in the military who goes in and does her job gets to be anything she wants to be because she's protected in the military as being able to do any job a man can in most situations. So she can be as masculine as she wants to be and do her job and get rewarded for it. Whereas if she was out in society, she'd get crap for it.
Very good point. Very, very good point. When we had, it brings to mind something that the folks from the Service Members Legal Defense Network said. We had Shara Greer. She's one of the attorneys or one of the legal counsel, so, and she works with people. There's something called, and how did they put it? It was lesbian baiting, or basically the way it works is male officers, go after and want a particular female service member to have sex with them, and then when they don't, they start calling them a lesbian, and this circle of people calling them a lesbian gets bigger and bigger, whether they are or not, and they end up falling into the... But women are often victimized that way in the military because they won't... it's so unfair. It really is.
Well, it is unfair, and yes, there are very immature people in the military in places, and I have seen this particular thing you're talking about where that girl doesn't go out with any men, therefore she must be a lesbian, and I have dated a ton of them. Just a ton. I dated a ton of the lesbian girls, go to the movies with them and this, that, and the other thing. We called it having a beard. There were the gay guys and the lesbian girls would associate with each other to cover each other. I don't know. I probably know of 8 or 10 couples where 2 gay guys and 2 lesbians cross married. One of the gay guys would marry one of the lesbians, and the other gay guy would marry one of the other lesbians. So you had a male service member who was gay and a female service member who was a lesbian. They would marry the other person's non-military partner so that they could get domestic partner benefits and have health care for their spouses. This was done, I know, quite regularly in Hawaii and California in the 80s and 90s.
Well, these are new perspectives, and I can so easily understand why. One of the things I have learned in talking to so many people during the show is the huge amount of benefits that, say, a gay man who's having a relationship with another gay man, they're partners but cannot be married, and so one of them is serving in a foreign country, the other is staying home in the United States. The military will, if their partner gets killed over there, the military doesn't come to them and tell them. If their partner is injured and is in the hospital, the military won't tell them. So, and plus you can't communicate freely. You dare not use the internet to. So, not only that, things like housing. If you move, they don't pay for your partner to move because there's no relationship. I can see that's a beautiful way to. Well, it's not the way it should be, but nonetheless, that's very
genius. They were definitely breaking the law. Okay. There's no doubt about that. If you get down to it, it was it could be considered fraud. However, it was socially right. It may have been considered illegal, but it was morally right in that they should have had those benefits anyway. And people that were creative enough to figure this out, that if Joe and Mark, and Joe's in the military, and Mark's not, find Lisa and Charlene, and Lisa's in the military, so there you go. They cross marry. Everybody's protected. It's quite often that married couples in the military are separated for months or years at a time by duty assignments. You're not under suspicion. You've got base housing. You've got all the benefits that the heterosexual couples get, and you're protected.
I had forgotten the issue.
That's why she doesn't date guys.
Exactly. And I had forgotten all about the issue of base housing, plus being able to go in the PX, and you have to drive, wherever where you could, have PX benefit. So, it solves a lot of problems. It's actually very creative because, and you're correct too in saying that it's morally and. The correct thing to do, and you have to even question that it's breaking a law. Whose law? I mean, I understand we're a nation of laws, but
yes, I understand we're a nation of laws, and like I say, I always tried to live only by one rule, and that's treat anybody else the way I want to be treated. I was fortunate enough that when the don't ask, don't tell rule came into effect in the 90s. I was holding a job called the Drug and Alcohol Programs Advisor, or the DAPA, for the squadron I was in. And it was kind of a catch-all job that had to do with anything with HR. And so I was the person designated that if you were gay or lesbian and you wanted to exercise your right to ask for a discharge because you were gay, that I was the person that you came to. And I do not know how many people that came and told me they were gay and they wanted out, and I would say, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, why don't you come back in a week and tell me that again? Especially if I knew they were a good sailor, I would say, I didn't hear you. You come tell me next week, and maybe I'll hear you. And that kept people from dropping out of the military that were an asset. It saved assets for the military. And, then there were some cases where I knew it was the best thing for that person, and they would come and tell me, and, sure, we'd process the paperwork as quickly and quietly as possible. And I don't doubt that happened in hundreds and hundreds of places.
Donna, how ironic it is that you were in that was your job function. That's the ultimate irony.
Oh, yeah. I'm sitting here hiding the fact that I am who I am. And then the job that I had at the time, that fell under it.
Yeah. Donna, What is it like? Do you know other folks like yourself in your area? Are there? I'm trying to get a feeling. Most of the transsexuals we talk to are in larger cities, and not that Bentonville is small by any means. We came to know that at the beginning of the show once I finally caught on to the Walmart thing. But can you tell us what it was like and meeting others? I mean, there's plenty of gays and there's plenty of lesbians, and one could even say there's plenty of bisexuals, and we have some that listen to the show. But transgendered, we don't know that much about because trying to learn.
Most transgendered people, if they go through transition and change from one gender to the other totally, most of them become stealth and they disappear into the woodwork and live the life that they wanted to lead. As far as the transgender population here in Arkansas, I have went to great lengths to try to calculate it, and it has been very difficult for me. But I personally know about 40 or 50 in the local area that are transgendered of one flavor or the other. Eureka Springs, Gay Mecca, of course.
Yes.
In Eureka Springs, twice a year, they have a worldwide transgendered conference, a cross-dressers conference. It's the NFEM getaway. You can look it up on the web. And they take over an entire hotel there, the Park Basin Hotel, and they take over the sixth-floor hotel, and for a week the girls have a wonderful time because Eureka is such an accepting city that, transgendered people over there in Eureka, nobody looks up except the tourists. Also, we're lucky enough in here in Northwest Arkansas to have a chapter of Tri-S. Tri-S supports heterosexual cross-dressers. I don't agree with their politics, but I'm really glad that they're there because a lot of transsexuals and transgendered people go through that phase, especially if they've hidden the fact that they're transgendered. They go through that phase of, I'm just a cross-dresser, and I've got to send out my heartfelt thanks to Jamie Renee, the president of Sigma Mu here, for the hard work that she's done here in Northwest Arkansas. The Sigma Mu chapter represents Arkansas and Missouri, Oklahoma, and Kansas. They travel all over the place. But we have a large transgender population here.
And that's fascinating to me. You know, we talk about the homo rainbow or the rainbow flag. And Donna, I have learned so many things since beginning this show. That it's amazing how many variants that there are. For instance, we had Julia Serrano on a couple of times. She is a male to female transsexual who has a female partner. And I think if I recall, that's the way you put it for yourself at the beginning of the show. Is that your situation too?
Yes, I am a male to female transsexual. I do not live as a woman full time because I'm still trying to make enough money to afford the facial surgery and other things that I need to transition fully and be accepted in society to the point where I may be able to continue to gainfully be employed. But yes, I live with my wife Faith, and we were married as man and woman in June of 2000, and then she blessed me with this year in June. She proposed in April and had set up a surprise wedding, and we married as woman and woman in June of this year, and it was one of the most wonderful things that's ever happened to me in my life, for her to express her acceptance and love of me, because when we married as man and woman, she did not know about Donna.
Well, you know, that it's fascinating to me because, for example, I think, like so many people, just assume that after a person makes the journey from one gender to the other, that becomes the opposite sex that they are from birth, that they're going to marry, for instance, a female to male. That male would marry a woman because they're really, you know, that. And this was, I guess, what I thought in the back of my mind. I'd never see. The thing is, it's that I didn't. It's just I assumed that, And I remember when Julia Serrano first came on the show, she just blew me away during the conversation. I thought that I was speaking to a heterosexual woman, and then she started talking about her family, and her partner is female, and it's just fascinating to me the variance of
gender and sexuality have nothing to do with each other. I know female to male transsexuals who were lesbians when they started and ended up being gay men. I know more than one. And the same way, I don't know how many male to female transsexuals that I have heard, I'm going to be a lipstick lesbian, and the next thing you know, as soon as they get their new equipment in place and it's all ready to test out, the next thing you know, they're out dating guys. I found that just through what I've seen, gender is in your mind, sex is in between your legs, but sexuality lies somewhere in between. And as you change from one gender to the other, you don't know what your preference is going to be when you reach the other side.
This is fascinating. So what you're implying then is sexuality is part of the spirit, then part of the
I believe that. Like you were talking earlier about the Lakota experience, I'm part Choctaw myself, and the transgendered or the transsexuals, the transgendered, as it were, they didn't have any. They didn't put sex in it, but the men who wanted to live as women were considered two-spirited and shamans, and the women who wanted to live as men and be warriors were considered to be two-spirit and shamans. They were considered to be in touch with the spirits of both worlds and be the strongest members of society in that Indian society because they could live in both worlds. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing to me, Donna, and I want to ask you, I mean, I don't expect you to, but I just want to, I guess we have to ask each other in some ways, we're in a similar boat, what is wrong with these people who hate us?
Throughout society, anyone who has been different has made people afraid. I think a certain amount of it is probably genetically coded in that in ancient times when we were fighting for survival and resources, when a different people came into the area, they immediately fought because of the resources in the area for survival. And I think that probably genetically somewhere back in there, some of that memory still exists. And we have to overcome that with the spirit and the brain.
It's very interesting. And it puzzles me, too. I often see the same set of people who are in the church pews dare I say, vote Republican or at least are conservatives. These are the same people who worship football players and pretend that wrestling is real, whether you believe it's real or not. But it's all this stuff about admiring power.
I'm sorry. Yes, I realize that. I'm laughing because I know a professional wrestler who is a male-to-female transsexual who continued wrestling to make extra money until her breasts grew to the point that she could no longer perform in the ring wearing man's tights.
Oh, the stars. Oh, Donna, that one takes the cake.
I'm serious. This is a friend of mine, and she lives here in Northwest Arkansas, and I dare not say her name, but she wrestled her way through paying the medical bills to get the psychological evaluation and all of that necessary to get her hormones, and continued to wrestle her way right on up saving money until her breasts were so large that she could no longer perform as a male in the ring bare-chested, and that's what her character did. So she had to quit wrestling, and she really hated to lose the money because she wanted to continue saving for her surgery.
Tom, that's just fabulous. That so clearly tells why it was, because I said whether or not you feel that wrestling is real, that was the tipping point. Oh, you do have a different perspective than all of us. It's fascinating to hear people that it's just amazing. You know, at the same token, it's not really surprising when you realize the way all of us have to cope and live our lives to like get around the fact that other people don't like us. We have to like do this and do that. But that is probably the most fascinating story I have ever heard.
But true. Yeah, but true.
That's amazing. Well, I just blows you away. But the thing about it is the people who are so into admiring anything physical, like skill or speed or wrestling or football or whatever, we are called, you know, the worst insult they can hurl at us as we are, that we're intellectuals. You've heard that in the South, you know, the damn intellectuals, you know, that.
Yeah,
as
intellectual
if
queers, yeah.
Yes. And, you know, the communists, the pickos, the fags, and all the words that everybody is, but the worst insult you can hurl is a damn intellectual. I don't understand it. That the human mind is one of our gifts. Why not use it? Yet,
I think it's one of the best gifts that we were ever given. I personally believe that a failure to use the intellectual gifts that we were given is dishonoring the universe. It's dishonoring the order of the universe not to use the brain power we were given.
Donna, I'm wondering about, and because it's conversation radio, I wouldn't normally just walk up to you and ask you, but I can't, because of the nature of the program.
I do not have anything that you can't ask me. If I don't want to answer, I'll tell you. There are no off-limits questions with me.
Thank you. Well, we talk about religion a lot on this show, and I'm wondering, you know, so many LGBT folks come through the experience of growing up and completely lose their faith. There's a lot of anger at religion as a whole. It's, you know, it's the last thing I want to think. Were you one of the ones that was able to? Did you keep your faith, or do you? Or what is your status there? I'm just curious, because you sound like you really.
Okay, I grew up in southern Mississippi. My family was not religious at all. There wasn't any religious influence in my childhood other than my sisters taking me to church or my grandmother taking me to church. And I did go to the Pentecostal church for a while on my own as a teenager until I found out how funny it was. I actually preached a little bit there for a while. They had youth preaching on Sunday nights, and I really believed. And then as I grew older, I fell away from that because of things that happened to me. And I went through phases of trying to drink myself to death for quite a few years. I drank a quart of whiskey a day just to numb the fact that I was living a lie, and eventually found spirituality through AA and got sober. So for me, you know, religion is for people who are afraid to go to hell. And spirituality is for those of us who have been there. Many of us in the GLBT community get stuck in between. We're still living in hell, and if we would realize that we have a choice to get out of that hell in our own mind through reclaiming our own power, our individual power and spirituality, that God doesn't hate us. We didn't do anything to God. You know?
That's well said.
And I apologize to my atheist brothers and sisters out there. If you want to believe there is no God, that's fine. And I honor that. But I believe that there is a grand architect of the universe, and that will make all the Masons cringe out there that I say that, because that's how they refer to God.
It's all right. We have so many flavors on this network. They're all, you know, whatever you want to say.
By the way, I haven't resigned yet, so I am still a master mason and a past master of a lodge. I went through the Masonic Lodge and sat in every office and sat as a worshipful master of a Masonic Lodge. I did everything I could to be a man.
Fascinating.
It worked.
Well, there was something in your voice that told me you had some sort of connection to some sort of spirituality. I'm not surprised to hear about AA. I think many people who grow up LGBT, I mean, you're so badly beaten, and there's no way to fix you. You try to drown yourself in some drug or another. So many of it, I did it.
Yes, I did. I tried everything that there was that I thought would numb the pain or whatever to make me not feel the way that I felt inside.
You really have been through you're just blowing me away, because the things you have been through, it's like you're telling me about six lifetimes. You know, that normal people don't go through all of
you. That about me because of how I've been very blessed. I've been very blessed in that I got to grow up early and fast. At the time, I didn't know it, but yeah, I did. You see, my father, about the third time, when I got caught wearing one of my classmates' training bras in second grade, my father decided that I needed some training, and he took me to a prostitute and hired her to give me sex training three times a week. And I went through this from the time I was 7 years old until I was 12.
Oh, my God, it's a seven-year-old child?
No. And I didn't even realize then that I was being abused. I didn't understand what was happening to me.
Donald, I weep for you. That's so disturbing.
That's my life. It's not disturbing. It's an is. I mean, it may be disturbing to people, but it's just what I live through. And then at 16, I got married. I got married to the Baptist preacher's daughter. We had a formal wedding. They painted the shotgun white. And out of that, when I was still 16, 3 weeks before I turned 17, I had a beautiful baby daughter born. And I have managed, after I got outed by my sister, I have managed to regain more of a relationship with her now, a more comfortable relationship than I have had in years, because I can talk to her and we don't talk about my transsexuality, but at least I'm not hiding from her anymore. And you know, I don't have to feel like I have to watch every word if I slip up and say something about, you know, my hormone treatments or something, or I went to bought a dress the other day. It's no big deal anymore. So, you know, that's just how my life has been a blessing, that I have been able to live every day of it.
Donna Marie, I have to tell you, I feel that though I cannot compare your stories, I've been through my experience too, and what you've told me, it makes me weep that people treated you that way, because it's such a disservice to the spirit of what any sort of faith or Christianity or loving your fellow man. It's so different. But I have to tell you too, at the same time, so many of us go through these things, and the words you used, I'm so blessed. I say those things too, and I feel that even though I've been through some, it's funny how life is that way, that sometimes if you could get through those really awful times, there is a blessing. And
I really don't feel like the things I went through, so I went through them. I'm not Brandon Tina. I'm still alive. I'm not one of the people listed on Remembering Our Dead. I'm not Matthew Shepard. I'm alive and I'm walking, and however I was treated, it doesn't matter. I survived. Let's be sorry for those of us who have paid the ultimate price because they were different.
Wow. You know, Donna, I think we need to give you your own show. I just think you're remarkable, and I'm sure the listeners do, because I keep it on the chat room, and when the chat room goes stone cold silent, nobody says a word, for a long, long period of time, it means they're fascinated. And trust me, it's been that way. You indeed have such remarkable, and beautiful perspective of life. I have to admire you for all of that you've come through, and to still have a gentle spirit, because you do. It's a kind and very gentle spirit, and I don't know, the way the world treats us, we don't always expect that, do we?
Well, no, and I haven't always lived it. I've been as tough as I had to be for the situation, and I'm grateful that today, today I do well. I'm not treated badly when I'm out in Northwest Arkansas in the mall, dressed as Donna, going to the movies. The worst I get is a sneer look, Nobody. You know, they sneer and they whisper behind my back, and thank God I lost my hearing in the Navy, so I don't hear a lot of it. My wife says sometimes they say awful things. But anyway, they never do to my face. And then what I have found out that if we, and you know, trans people are out when they're out the door. You walk out the door, you're out. You don't have the choice of hiding or being straight for the day. They know who you are. And as you meet people and talk to them and they see you're just a human, somehow they begin to change. And we can't change how the straight people feel about us or the bigots feel about us by using bigotry and hatred. We have to do what we have to do to fight the good fight. But we have to fight it with love, compassion, and understanding. These people are ignorant. If they had enlightenment, they wouldn't be this way.
I'm sitting here listening to you, and my mind goes to also... I realize it sounds like we're trying to take over the head-on radio network. We'll perform an LGBT coup here. What we'll do, we'll just get rid of all the other shows. We'll have an L show. We'll find us a lesbian. We'll have a G show. I've got that covered. And we'll have a bisexual and a transgender show. And the reason I say that is not because out of ego. I say that because we are so often accused of, even the Pope has recently accused us of being blocking world peace. Literally, the Pope has said that.
Right. Queers are blocking world peace. And excuse me, I hope I don't offend any listeners by using the word queer. I use the word queer because I am queer. And to me, queer means odd and interesting and different. And I am. And
yes, you've got them all covered.
Steal that word from me and make it a bad word. I'm queer, okay? And I'm proud of it.
Well, I think you're absolutely remarkable. You have been an absolutely remarkable guest, and you've taken us places that none of us expected to go this evening. I'm blessed to have found you, and it was accidental. But so many things that we say are accidental, or maybe I can risk saying are God's way of keeping His anonymity. But in any case, I'm calling it.
I've heard it said that way before. Peter, and. I don't know. I don't believe in accidents. I just believe that, you know, things happen the way that they should. Sometimes we like them, sometimes we don't.
Completely agree. Imagine finding you by calling an LGBT community center in the far, far corner of Northwest Arkansas, which gets me forwarded to a someplace else, and I talk to a woman who says, "Oh well, my husband, he would be good." I go, "Okay, perfect." I just because the tone of her voice was so sincere and matter of fact and reality based that I knew that it was true. I mean, you know, I said, "Sure, let's do it." You know,
yeah. And it's odd to find a GLBT community center that has a trans person as president. I know that there's a few out there. But it's not that many trans people that you find involved in the greater GLBT community. They tend to marginalize themselves as much as they get marginalized. I will say some of the worst discrimination I've ever suffered in my life, and the worst hate mail I've ever got has been from within our family.
I see. I see. I'm sorry to hear that. Your daughter probably.
In our family, the LGBT family.
Oh, I see. I see.
The worst hate mail I've ever got has been from lesbians.
I see. Yes, I understand.
But it's because they don't understand who trans people are.
Well, this is very interesting because
I got this hate mail. My wife and I, and an intersex friend of ours, and another trans person or two, we put together an educational team and took it on the road here in Northwest Arkansas. We went over to Diversity Weekend at Eureka Springs and did what we call TI time, and held education about transsexuals and intersex people. And the UU Church, the United Universalist Church, asked us to bring that same presentation to them, and we took it to them. And, you know, I think it overall improved our community as a whole, so much so that I have encouraged the lesbians and the gay guys to get together an educational seminar, and let's do the same thing there. Let's teach each other in our family what our alphabet means. You know,
let's figure out
what the bears really want. You know, what about the leather guys? They're all our brothers and sisters. Let's
this
learn
is
about
so
them.
True. This is so true. It's a wonderful point. We have a large number of straight listeners who may not know what bears are. We have a bear on next week. I believe you could call him a bear. You can tell him what a bear is.
Okay.
Go ahead.
A bear is a large, hairy man or someone who is attracted to large, hairy men. You know, they like beards and hairy chests and really, you know, large macho guys, and some of them are quite rotund, and some of them are just large and muscular, but that's a bear.
Yeah, that's a bear. And there's
somebody... And I think that's an accurate description. Please correct me if I'm wrong, Peter.
No, you did it far better than I could, because I always wait for my guests to describe themselves. I've learned never to... And thank you for doing that, because that's everything you said is absolutely true. And it's interesting that you would include them in the list of people. Find out what the bears want. That just that touched my heart. That's because you really are probably the most inclusive person I have ever spoken to along those lines.
Well, I just believe that we all are, and you know, just like I said, I've got something I say about straight people. They can't help it. Straight people can't help it. That's just who they are. Okay.
No, they can't. God bless them. They just...
You know, that's what I've heard about so many times said about gay people. And actually, I wish that they would take that attitude about us. We can't help it. That's just who we are, and let it go. And I was fascinated to learn about as much about the GLBT community as I have learned over the years. Especially being involved with the community center, and before that being involved with the Silver Dollar Court in Reno, Nevada, I learned a lot about the gay community from being involved in the court and the wonderful work that the Silver Dollar Court does in keeping the AIDS residence open in Reno, Nevada.
That's interesting. And tell us about the court. I'm not aware of it, and I'm sure many of the listeners aren't.
The international court system now, and I'm not an expert on this, but it's gay people who have created a system of royalty among themselves. Usually, you have a large number of performing drag queens, and a drag queen is usually a gay male who dresses as a woman only to perform as a female impersonator or as a parody of a woman. And the court systems, drag queens do this because they say they raise their money a dollar at a time, and they perform numbers and ask for tips. And the Silver Dollar Court used to raise $100,000 a year or so to keep AIDS patients in their home instead of them having to be removed to some other place. And they used to feed, you know, a couple of hundred families at Christmas time. And they have some sort of hierarchy that one court recognizes another. I know that there's the Silver Dollar Court. I know Oklahoma is starting a court system. They have a barony now. I guess you have to start as a barony or something. I know that Dallas has a court system. They're mostly out west. I don't think they're out east that much, in that you have so many of the Miss Gay whatever pageants on the East Coast.
Yeah. Well, I had I'd heard the term court, but and associated it in my mind with the female impersonator folks, but I guess I kind of thought it was like a city thing. Really local area. I didn't realize that there was fundraising and large. I mean, see, this is so interesting about the LGBT community. You're telling me things that I don't even know about the LGBT community. This is how secreted and how badly. You know, and straight people don't get us, and hell, I don't even get us all.
I still don't understand part of us either. I don't have to understand you to be able to accept you and honor you for who you are.
Well,
if you're an adult and you're doing nothing to hurt anyone else, I accept you as part of our family. And our community center, by the way, we have straight couples in our GLBT community center. And I'm darn proud of it.
That's remarkable. Tell us about the community center. We really haven't touched on that very much.
Okay, our community center here basically runs as a virtual enterprise. The goals that we have and our founder's goals were one day to put brick and mortar on the ground and have a safe place in Northwest Arkansas for GLBT people to go and be who they were. We have a small lending library that is housed in one of the members' houses, we have GLBT books and movies and things that we lend out to our members for free. We have a HIV buddy program that we're blessed with an angel on earth by the name of Chris Hannon, a 25-year HIV survivor. And our AIDS Buddy program provides social services, by that I mean somebody visits people with HIV in our program. You know, they get visited like once a week. They get phone calls every day. These guys get together and they have a game night and a breakfast. And if somebody needs food, well, we figure out a way to get it to them. And actually, we use the churches a lot. Angel Food Ministries is great because we can spend $90 and we can get enough food to feed 15 people for a month out of that $90. So thank God for Angel Food Ministries. They may not like us, but I'm sure grateful for them. We have a 1-800 number. I think that's how you got in touch with us originally.
Yes, I saw the number and I thought, well, I bet this doesn't work out of state, but I'll try it. And be darned if it isn't a national toll-free line.
And I'm so proud of that fact that we have that, because we have helped people at last count from 14 states get resources somewhere of some kind. Sometimes it's people moving here. Sometimes it's somebody calling us to find out about services. Is there a shelter for an abused gay man in such and such Arkansas or somewhere? And, you know, we don't ever really have the answer. A lot of times we have to go get it. We're an all-volunteer organization. We have a zero-paid staff. We are a 501 C3. I never get this right. 3C, C3 anyway. We are a nonprofit, and we're non-political. That's why I had to say at the beginning, these are my views and not the community center's views.
Yeah.
Because I was afraid we might wander off into politics.
Yeah, we do a lot.
Those are some of our major programs. And, you know, people say we'll never make it, but I, as far as I'm concerned, as long as we don't give up, we'll never fail. So if we don't give up, we're bound to get there one day. So if someone out there on the airways is listening and you have an extra $100,000 laying around you don't need, boy, we could sure use it for our building fund. If you have $5, we could use that too. And you can get to us at www.nwa.northwestarkansas.glbtcc.org. It's a mouthful, but if you just search Gay and Arkansas, you'll find us because we're way up there on the Google pages.
You really are, actually. That's how I find you, because you posted really high on the Google pages. How did you manage that? That's always a trick.
Persistence and persistence and persistence, and the fact that we're blessed with one of our members happens to be a real... We got a lot of geeks, okay? there's a lot of Gay... people here in Northwest Arkansas who happen to be computer technicians working for Walmart. And I can't say that Walmart has ever helped us, but we wouldn't be in existence without them, because I can't say that they ever did anything for us, but the American Family Association says they did. And I'm really grateful for what they did do for us.
Yeah.
Walmart is, by the way, not as evil to gay people as they're made out to be. They have a great pride group here in the home office, and there's a lot of resources for the GLBT people in that pride group here. And, you know, whatever you say about them elsewhere, they're not the best in the world, but they're not the great Satan when it comes to gay people either. I know several transsexuals who are transitioning on the job at Walmart and Sam's Clubs. So they may not be great, but they treat the people okay.
Interesting. Do they have partner benefits, insurance?
They do not have domestic partner benefits, and they do not have a non-discrimination policy against gender identity. Although, like I say, I know of at least two transsexuals who are actively transitioning at this time, one in a Sam's Club and one in a Super Center here in Arkansas. but they do have a non-discrimination policy for sexual orientation.
Oh, they do. They do. That's a good point that they do that. I wasn't aware of that. Walmart comes up a lot of, smaller stores going into business and low wages and this sort of thing. I didn't really know what their position was within the company on LGBT issues. It's too bad
Several two steps forward, and one step back, and then they got into a lot of trouble a couple of years ago because they were aggressively moving forward in being more inclusive, and they had a couple of donations that was made by their diversity outreach group that the American Family Association got a hold of, and they made a big stink out of it. And there was a lot of negative feedback that came back into the home office. And I think the board of Walmart decided that they had to take a step back and look at their customer base, because Walmart is small town America, and a lot of their customers are the Walmart Republicans, and so they have to kind of walk that line between what's fair and what their customers will put up with, because, like you say, bigots are everywhere, and that's how we started this conversation. It was about the Arkansas bigots not wanting to allow cohabitating couples to be foster parents or adopt children.
Well said. I remember back there was a time that Walmart was actually a member of the a national chamber of commerce, the LGBT business chamber of commerce. They'd actually joined that.
They still are.
I thought they had backed off of that because of all the noise, the American Family Association. I didn't realize they were still.
They may have, and I don't know it. It's possible that they may have backed off, and I don't know it.
I'm not 100% sure. But, every time anybody makes a move, the American Family Association doesn't like. I mean, right now the American Family Association is jumping up and down about Ford, saying that it's them that have put for making Ford's profits drop and all this stuff. Ford makes gay cars.
Oh,
the American Family.
Who knows? to me, I don't know. Like I say, the people that believe in the American Family Association are those people who eat their truth from a spoon, and they will never know their own life or the freedom of self-determination.
They do another aspect.
The church to control their spirituality and the church to control their thinking, they will never know the wonderful blessing of self-determination.
This is so true. And what they don't realize is this being spoon-fed, what they don't realize is that's a direct way into their pockets.
Yeah, they get spoon-fed and pay 10% of their income for it. And there's nothing wrong with giving. Now, I give, and I don't doubt if my wife and I looked at what we really give, that we exceed the 10% tithe, because we give more in the way of services probably than cash, because we don't have a lot of cash. But, Lord, we buy a lot of gas going places to do things and provide services. They don't realize that by being spoon-fed this truth, it's just a way in their pocket for them to get more money. And I'll guarantee you Dr. Dobson's living better than a lot of his followers are. You know, he may need a new limousine, so by God, we better tithe.
Yes. Well, in fact, what I'm hearing is that the whole Focus on the Family, one of their main fundraisers is bashing LGBT folks. I heard an interesting comment from one of our guests. It was a guest we had from Soul Force, and Soul Force, Mel White there at Soul Force, was actually worked together with Jerry Falwell. I mean, he felt like he was Falwell's speechwriter. Obviously, he's gay, but he was still working within the organization and hoping to make a difference. Let's put it like that.
Right. I understand that. I have done that with organizations myself at different ones.
Yeah, he made the comment. He quotes Jerry Falwell as having said to him that if there weren't any such thing as gay people, that they would have to make them up. And I was just struck silent. Make them up for fundraising was the context of that conversation. Falwell said, I realize he's passed away now, but Falwell actually said that to one of the members of Soul.
I wouldn't doubt it, because if they didn't have demons, like I said before, religion is for people who are afraid of going to hell, and they'll pay to stay out of it. Spirituality is for those of us who have already been there.
I agree. Well, Donna, you have been a remarkable guest this evening. I've kept you on the phone for almost 2 hours. I'll go ahead I need to go ahead and exit the program fairly soon. So I'm going to say to you that I deeply appreciate your being on the show, and in every way, I appreciate you in every way, and I certainly don't want you to become a stranger to this show. We'd love to have you back again, or if there's any comments, something that's going on, feel free to use the toll-free line and call during the show. As long as there's not a guest, you know, on at that particular time, I'll put you on right away. I just feel, I mean, there's something about your spirit and your nature that makes you know, even myself and I believe the listeners feel very included. And that's a very beautiful thing, considering how you've been treated.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to be on your show. And I really appreciate the fact that, you know what, you're one of the very few people who have interviewed me that never called me he. And so that's a real feather in your cap. And I'm glad to have the opportunity, and I'm sorry I've run my mouth and taken
this
over.
So no, we everything. No,
again,
please.
I'd be glad to if you could put up with me.
It's not a matter of putting up with you, Donna. Honest to God, you've been a remarkable guest, and I mean that in every way. That I'm watching the chat room; they're telling me to tell you that they love you, and what a wonderful guest and amazing. And people are saying I can identify with him. And I'm sorry. See, I just you made me do that.
Sorry,
but yeah, that they identify with you, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
That.
And if anybody wants any information, you can email info at our website address, and I'll get that email if anybody wants to write. You can write info@nwaglbt.org, and I will see that. And once again, thank you so much. And let's not forget the fight. The fight is that we've got to try to mobilize the vote in Arkansas and beat this bad bill come November.
Amen. Yes, and that will be another thing we'd like to hear updates on. Thank you so much, Donna, and good night to you, and God bless.
Good night and God bless. Red Skelton said that, and I always thought it was wonderful. My brother. See you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Donna. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. What a remarkable guest. And you know, you just discover these people. Here I am. I called the community center, and he was just talking about the community center there in the NWAGLBT community center. And because I was looking for an organization in Arkansas that could talk to us about the adoption issue. And I didn't see an organization that fit my category. And I said, well, you know, directly. So I thought to myself, well, what I'll do is I'll call the community center, and perhaps they will be able to refer me. So I called the community center. This is like day before yesterday or yesterday afternoon, late. I'm not sure anymore. The time blurs together. They had a toll-free line. I dialed it, and a woman answered. And it was like, hi, I'm the host of an LGBT conversation radio. Do you know any gay people? We had a wonderful laugh over that. It was like, you know, I don't know who I'm talking to, but, you know, if you know LGBT people, could we have them on the air to talk about? So she referred us to her husband, Donna, and what a delightful guest he was. I really was. Agnes, I'm wondering, maybe you could type the answer back to me in production. How long is that that track I sing? By the way, VJC, we didn't get to your gay bar across the street segment, so we're going to move it out by one evening. We'll move them out. But we have a remarkable track I'd like to run if there's enough time, and I believe there is. It's 10:50. That should take us to 10:56 or 55. Absolutely remarkable track sent to us by our friend Larry Sanders, and it's called Living in the Shadows, and it's a track by David Meese. I think you're going to find it astounding. Roll it, Agnes. just remarkable that that track would arrive on a day when we had a guest like Donna. Hey, little boy, are you living in the shadows? Hey, little girl, are you living in the shadows? Do you feel the touch? I see touch. And truly, our guest lived in the shadows for many, many years. And God managed to pull out a beautiful diamond out of that. And I appreciate him. See, she danced to be a guest. We appreciate her being on. We appreciate Donna being on the show. Again, reminders, John Fox, our friend John Fox, will be back tomorrow evening. Not tomorrow evening, Thursday evening. John will be back online with us Thursday evening. So myself and John Fox and Bob Kincaid and maybe another host, you never know who's going to join him, will be in the horn section on Thursday evening. Right after the horn section, John will be doing his show live from Australia. And we're looking forward to John coming back. He's been fighting some evil issues with an internet service provider, but I think it's settled down now. And I, too, will be live on Thursday evening in my regular time slot from 9 until 11. And, of course, Bob will be back Thursday evening and will be in his regular time slot from 6 till 9. There's a full evening of programming on the Head On Radio Network, and all of the shows are special in so many different ways. And there's really nothing like the Head On Radio Network for just having a forum to just talk. Why we call it conversation radio, because in fact it is everything that talk radio is not. There is time, and there's no hurry, and there's no over talking unless it's just a technical problem but one of us can't hear the other. Everyone has an equal amount of time to speak, and the callers also have that same. Because we appreciate all of you. In fact, we consider you to be not only guests and listeners, it works in reverse. We're guests in your home, and we thank you very much for taking the time out of your day when you could be doing something else and listening to this show and participating via email and via chat and all of the different ways that you guys contact us and speak to us and our guests. Let's see. I'm just still dazed by Donna. It'll take me at least until tomorrow to recover. Oh yeah. Okay. Now here's where I was at. Okay. Tomorrow evening, I will be in replay. Also, Bob Kincaid will be in replay, and John Fox. This is because Bob will be returning early in the evening. He won't be back in time, and I have managed to book myself into a situation tomorrow where I'm going to be very late getting back home myself. So. It's going to be, a little bit difficult. So we are all going to take a break tomorrow evening, and of course the chat room will be active. Plus, I think our sweetheart Agnes, who is producing in Bob's absence, we're taking advantage of her because Agnes did have a back owie, and we're making her sit for very long periods of time without taking a break. She says, "Oh, that's fine." She's probably chewing on the microphone cable, trying to escape the chair. But nonetheless, we appreciate Agnes filling in Bob's absence. Agnes always does a wonderful job hitting the mark and hitting the cues and keeping everything rolling here on the Head On Radio Network. Tomorrow night's guest, no. There is no guest tomorrow night. That's right. I was going to tell you about the Thursday night guest. The Thursday night guest I'm looking forward to talking with, Jason and DeMarco. Now, Jason and DeMarco are not only a top contemporary Christian music group, they are also a gay couple. Now, they're everybody knows about them. These guys are like big. They're all over Europe. It's just interesting. We had a lesbian couple who traveled and were gospel singers, and now we have a gay male couple who are traveling and are gospel singers, and it's just amazing to me to have folks on, and they're so surprising in every way. So in any case, good evening to you. Thank you for joining in any way that you did, and here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to... One who's done all the things you said.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Is the Quality News Network. Congressional Democrats are charging the CIA with acting above the law. Senate Democrat Dick Durbin wrote a letter to Attorney General Michael Mukasey asking for a probe into whether the CIA obstructed justice by destroying videotapes from 2002, which contained interrogation scenes that many critics have described as torture. President Bush says he doesn't recall being told about the existence of the videotapes or that they were destroyed. CIA Director Michael Hayden admits to ordering the tapes' destruction to protect the identity of CIA operatives. Four of the five British residents held by the U.S. at Guantanamo Bay will be released.